You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Unexpectedly heartfelt ukulele performance there from Iceland.
It's Eurovision on 95BFM with our European correspondent, Cameron Mulgan.
I haven't heard that intro yet. That's awesome. This week is our third week of Eurovision. It's our regular segment where I catch up with European correspondent Cameron Mulgan. This morning, Cameron joined me from Berlin and we spoke about the developments in the Russian invasion of Ukraine. We talked a little about the refugee crisis like we did last week, but this week we decided to focus on quite distressing reports of pimps looking to exploit women refugees that have been leaving Ukraine. We then moved on to talk about Europe's economic relationships with Russia. Here we are now.
So let's begin with an update on the situation in Ukraine. Can you perhaps give me an overview of military movement over the past week and what the situation is looking like currently?
Yeah, so the war grows ever deadly almost 3 weeks in. In Mariupol, the port city in the country's southeast, it continues to be under siege. The Ukrainian presidential advisor states that over 2,500 civilians have been killed. There's been reports of mass graves and burying bodies where they lay because it's just too dangerous to do individual burials. And just tonight, there's been reports of a hospital being in the city being overtaken by Russian forces with over 400 people inside held hostage. That goes off the back of last week, a maternity ward of a hospital was bombed with women and children dying. Some drone footage came out a couple of days ago that showed the city, you know, burning basically a huge amount of destruction and burning apartment blocks. Apparently 2,000 cars today and yesterday have been able to leave the city after Russian shelling previously prevented escape. And you've still got over 400,000 people still stuck in the city with no power, no internet, no heating. In Kyiv, there's still been fighting and some shelling and missile attacks. That big Russian convoy north of the city is now apparently being slightly broken up and spread out. The US military reports over the weekend that the Russian army hasn't made too many major gains. And on Saturday, Zelensky said that 1,300 Ukrainian soldiers have been killed so far in the war. Kharkiv, the second largest city in Ukraine, continues to be shelled. A residential building was hit on Monday. And in Melitopol, that town under Russian control, the elected mayor was kidnapped on Friday and replaced with a pro-Russian mayor. And there's been reports of that happening in other smaller towns as well. This week, there's been peace talks between Ukraine and Russia, but nothing concrete. Zelensky later today will make a speech to the US Congress appealing for more help. And he also just made a speech to the Canadian Parliament. Next week, on the 24th, there's going to be an extraordinary meeting of NATO with Biden due to be in attendance. And I mentioned a couple weeks ago as well about Poland giving Ukraine old Soviet planes. So that's been scuppered by the US. It was seen as having too direct involvement in the war, especially if the planes were actually flying, taking off missions from US air bases in Europe. And also just tonight, leaders of the Czech Republic, Poland and Slovenia have traveled by train to meet with Zelensky in Kyiv as a sign of support. They actually just released a photo of them in a room on Twitter, like looking at a map of Kyiv.
Let's talk about the civilians who this is affecting and the movement of refugees. We've spoken quite a bit about the numbers coming over and the different cities' reception across Europe. Since then, there's been some changes in refugee reception in the UK. Can you tell me a little bit about what's changed there?
Yeah. So just a slight recap. So there's been over 3 million refugees which have fled Ukraine, according to the UN, with an additional 1.5 million internally displaced. Yeah, so the UK have announced the refugee scheme. Each household will get a £350 a month allowance to house a refugee. They've had over 100,000 people sign up in the first day, with Transport Secretary Grant Shapps also saying that he will open his house to a Ukrainian family, although there's no date yet on when this will be implemented. Initially, this will just be for family members and relations, but in the future, individuals and also charities can sponsor refugees. Yeah, this is off the back of the kind of disastrous refugee scheme they announced last week, which people had to be sponsored and get all the kind of biometric details initially done before they could come. So they've changed it now so that you can fill the application online. And then once you arrive in the UK, you can do your fingerprinting and stuff. However, I was talking to a friend last week in the UK who's trying to get his partner's family over from Poland now. And he said it still takes like 5 hours just to fill out the forms and stuff.
Last week, we finished off celebrating International Women's Day. It's pretty disheartening in the spirit of that to hear reports of pimps looking to exploit women refugees coming over. Can you tell me just maybe some of the stories that are coming to light in that area?
Yeah. So NGOs have sounded the alarm, basically, of trafficking concerns for refugees coming over, since it is mainly women and children alone. Andrew Wallace of Unseen UK had said that there's been various reports of people traffickers operating in Poland, Romania, and other countries. Stephen McGrath of Associated Press did a really good report on the Romanian border, with kind of patrols and suspected traffickers being scared away. In Berlin, which I mentioned last week, of lots of people welcoming refugees at the train station, police had to spread warnings of traffickers operating, including reports of men offering money to the volunteers to connect them with individual women, which is horrifying. So now in most refugee processing areas across the different countries, you've got plainclothes officers in patrol. I think it just goes to show like how horrible and vulnerable of a situation it is and why we should support people in these circumstances.
Let's move now from the refugee situation to Europe's economic relations with Russia. Can you tell me about that relationship in terms of energy imports and what negotiations and movements are looking like in that area?
So Germany and the EU have a huge energy reliance on Russia. They're effectively paying for the war, millions of euros a day for it, because Russia is the largest country giving imports to the EU, giving energy imports to the EU. And this gives Russia about 40% of its budget. Well, sorry, Russia's gets about 40% of its national budget via energy exports. So Nord Stream 2, that initial gas pipeline between Russia and Germany, was cancelled at the start of the war. However, there's still pipelines coming. In terms of the EU total energy imports, according to think tank Bruegel, there's been over a quarter of the EU's gas is by Russia, some coal, and 25% of petroleum from Russia. And for Germany is the largest of the pack. So they get 55% of natural gas, 52% of coal, and 34% of oil comes from Russia. On Sunday, the energy minister, Robert Habeck, said that immediately cutting this off would cause immediate supply shortages, stoppages, and he predicted mass unemployment, poverty, and unheated homes. There's been the timeline to give up Russian coal by the summer and to phase out Russian oil by the end of the year, but it's still very reliant on Russian gas. So the US blocked Russian oil imports, and the UK have said they'll join the embargo by the end of the year. The EU aims to cut gas dependency on Russia by two-thirds this year, but even with record high non-Russian imports, it would not be enough to sufficiently refill storage for the EU ahead of next winter. So in terms of alternatives, well, the US and Venezuela have slightly thawed relations. There's Saudi Arabia, but it also executed 81 people over the weekend. And there's talk of Iran possibly supplying as well with the resumption of a nuclear deal. So yeah, on the whole, it's a very exposed region that's reliant on Russian energy imports. You'd hope that it would, you know, provide more basis for green energy and energy independence, but it seems like in the immediate term, they're stuck on fossil fuels.
That was our European correspondent, Cameron Mulgan, speaking to me about the Russian invasion of Ukraine on this week's Eurovision segment. Make sure you tune in next Wednesday as Cameron and I keep covering the situation in Ukraine and what it's like being on the ground in Europe.
Macedonia with a reggae twist.
That was Eurovision on 95BFM.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.